the feeding of the multitudes. Brother Rick.
Prophecy is a love letter. Prophecy is a love letter. It is a letter from a father to his children, reassuring them that he knows their future. You cannot get more passionate than a love letter. The feeding of the multitudes is a different kind of prophecy. It's a love letter of action. We want to share with you this afternoon for a few minutes how the feeding of the multitudes is an expression of the deep and abiding love of God through Christ on our behalf. The feeding of the multitudes of the 5,000 and the feeding of the 4,000 were startling miracles, even for Jesus, for never had he affected so many at one time in such an unpredictable way. And he did it twice. There is only one miracle, brethren, that is recorded in all four of the Gospels. It is the feeding of the 5,000. This is significant for several reasons. It means we probably should pay very close attention. The feeding of the 4,000 carries with it many strong similarities, which we will discuss. And the fact that the feeding of the 4,000 follows with very few recorded events in between enhances the thought that these two major miracles are in fact connected to give us a prophecy of action. So we begin by looking at Jesus' explanation of how these things fit together. If we look at Matthew 16, verses 5 to 21, Matthew 16, 5 to 12, and the disciples came out to the other side of the sea, but he had forgotten to bring any bread. And they said, and Jesus said to them, "Watch out and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees." They began to discuss this among themselves that he said, because he said that we didn't bring any bread. But Jesus answers, was aware of this and said, "You men of little faith, why do you discuss among yourselves that you have no bread? Did you not yet understand or remember the five loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets full you picked up? Or the seven loaves of the 4,000 and how many large baskets you filled? How is it that you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread? Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees." So Jesus draws their attention to these two miracles after the fact. And basically says, this isn't about food. He's saying this is about something much bigger. The feeding of the 5,000, we'd like to suggest an application. The feeding of the 5,000, we're going to suggest, applies to the gospel at the beginning of the gospel age. The feeding of the 4,000, we're going to suggest, applies to the end of the gospel age. So we're going to look at it from a whole gospel age perspective and look at these two miracles as showing us how the gospel age works. The feeding of the 5,000, we're going to suggest, and again, these are suggestions, applies to the Jewish Christian call primarily. The feeding of the 4,000, we suggest, will apply to the Gentile Christian call, sort of changing hands at Cornelius. And we'll give you several reasons why we believe that. We're going to break our comments up into chapters. We have 8 chapters to share with you in discussing how these two miracles actually we see as the development of a prophecy of action on the part of Jesus. Chapter number 1, the prelude. Beforehand, let's begin with the feeding of the 5,000. In Matthew 14, Mark 6, and Luke 9, we've got the combination of these scriptures here. "Now when Jesus heard about John, he withdrew himself from there in a boat to a secluded place by himself. And when the people heard of this, they followed him on foot from the cities. When he went ashore, he saw a large crowd and felt compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things and healed their sick. And when it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, 'This place is desolate. The hour is already late, so send the crowds away that they may go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy food for themselves and lodging.'" So we have the context of the feeding of the 5,000. Now let's take a look at some of the pieces. When he went ashore, when Jesus went ashore, the opportunity of the gospel was immediate. In other words, it was right there. He was there, and they were waiting for him. There was no other prophet of God on the scene at the time, and it was just Jesus and the people waiting to be fed. They were like a sheep, without a shepherd. Well, isn't that the best way to describe Israel? It's described that way elsewhere, Matthew 10:6. Jesus said, but rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And then finally, it describes the environment, and it says the place was desolate. What does it mean that it was desolate? It simply means it was an uncultivated cultivated region, but it was fit for pasture. Now see, this is important. It was fit for pasture, but it was not yet cultivated. So that gives us a sense of part of the feeding of the 5,000. The last section, going into the surrounding countryside to buy food. Remember Jesus said, or the apostle said, what are we going to do with all these people? Send them into the surrounding country to buy food because we can't do this. The people could have gone to the local communities to find food, but it would be the food, spiritual food, because remember Jesus, in explaining the 5,000, 4,000 afterwards, said, this is not about food. This is about something bigger. And remember he said, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. They could have gone and gotten the Pharisaical spiritual food that was already available. It was there for them. They could lodge within the community of the law or the interpretation of the law that surrounded them. So we have that sense of the feeding of the 5,000, sort of setting the context, the prelude. Now, let's take a look at the recorded events between the feeding of the 5,000 and the feeding of the 4,000. There are several things that happen. First, Jesus walked on water, perhaps indicating that the next feeding to take place would be after Jesus is in a glorified state, because he literally walks over the tumult of mankind and rescues his followers in their struggle. Jesus heals many. In Mark 6:53 and Matthew 14:34, we have those scriptures. Jesus teaches an in-depth lesson on the bread of life in John 6. And remember, many followers turned away from him in that in-depth lesson. And perhaps that's setting the stage for the spiritualization of both feedings. Jesus also heals the daughter of a Syrophoenician woman of an unclean spirit. And perhaps it's picturing the satanic and pagan influence that would soon be cast out of those Gentiles who were seeking Jesus. And finally, Jesus heals a deaf and mute man in Mark 7, 31-37. But he does it in an unusual way. He takes him aside. He does it in private. And he physically separates him, and he calls him to have his ears opened. And perhaps it's showing us that there was going to be a new opening of a new way for the gospel to proceed. So these are the events that are between the feeding of the 5,000 and the feeding of the 4,000. So now let's go to the feeding of the, first of all, there seems to be a connection in what happened during the feeding of the 5 and the 4. There is a connection, and those events in between help us to set up the connection, the going from one and progressing on to the other. These are not two different examples of the same thing. There's a progression, and we're suggesting to you that this is a prophecy of action. And if prophecy is a love letter, then this is Jesus showing us how his care would be for the entire church through the entire gospel age. Let's go to the feeding of the 4,000. Mark 8:1-3. In those days, when there was again a large crowd and they had nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples and said to them, I feel compassion for the people because they've remained with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. If I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on the way, and some of them have come from a great distance. So now there's a whole different attitude about what's happening here. There's several different pieces to this. First of all, there was a large crowd. Just like the feeding of the 5,000, the only difference, the number. Okay, so we have a large crowd. 3 days. They must have had just enough of their own provisions to get them to this point. Remember Cornelius in Acts chapter 10? Remember how in his vision, the angel said to him, your prayers have gone up for a memorial before the Lord. He had just enough to sustain him until the arrival of the Apostle Peter. And they had come from a great distance. What greater distance can you come than from paganism to find Christ? There is no greater distance on earth to come than from paganism. And how appropriate that the further from Christ they would travel, the more likely they would faint. So perhaps, again, this is a prophetic look at Jesus caring for the church from the very beginning and the calling of the apostles all the way down through the gospel age. Chapter 2 is preparation. We had the prelude, we had setting the stage, and now we have the preparation for the actual miracle of the feeding. In Mark 6, Matthew 14, and John 6, and what we're doing with these, with the feeding of the 5,000, is taking the different Gospels and combining the accounts to try to get all of the details into one reading. So that's why you've got all of these different references there. But he said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread?" Interesting. Why is Jesus asking Philip? They do not need to go away. You need to give them something to eat. This he was saying to test him, for he himself knew what he was intending to do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii are not worth of bread is not sufficient for them. For how will everyone receive? For everyone to receive a little. And he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go look. So the preparation is Jesus is having a conversation and preparing his apostles to do something. But they're dumbfounded. They're not sure what to do. So let's take a look at some of the details. Where are we to buy bread? Jesus isn't orchestrating this miracle individually. And that, brethren, is unusual. He is bringing his apostles into the orchestration of this miracle. He's saying, how are we going to do this? He could have, but he's bringing them into the picture. Instead, he includes the apostles in the question. Philip's response seems natural. How many of you have said this? Can't afford it. What is 200 denarii in relation to all these? A denarii is probably a day's wages. That's probably what they had in the treasury. How could we possibly manage to afford this? So Jesus is including his apostles. How many loaves do you have? Here's an interesting lesson. How many loaves do you have? It isn't our ability to shoulder the expense, but instead a willingness to pass on that which nourishes us, the bread of life. Jesus is teaching them to walk away from the money and walk toward the preparation of the bread. How are we going to do this? The knee-jerk reaction, we can't afford it. No. That's not my question. How many loaves do you have? What do you have that you can give? It's not about money. That's the lesson that Jesus is teaching here. And Jesus says, well, go look. Come on, get with me on this. I want you to be a part of this particular miracle. Go look. How could they have known they weren't supposed to focus on the money? Because that's what we would focus on, right? Well, how are you going to do this? Well, first, I don't have enough money in my account, so I don't know. Jesus is saying, think higher, think more deeply. There's something more here. Jesus was showing them step by step how to clear their minds of what was and how to accept what was now to be. So he's showing them in this chapter on preparation how to prepare to truly feed. Let's go on to the feeding of the 4,000. So you have the 5,000. He's talking to the apostles about this preparation. Feeding the 4,000 is a little bit different. In Matthew 15, 33 to 34, the disciples said to him, where would we get so many loaves in this desolate place to satisfy such a large crowd? And Jesus said to them, well, how many loaves do you have? And they answer. Let's examine this because there's a different reaction here. Remember, the feeding of the 4,000 is after the 5,000. Now, the apostles learned something. He said, Jesus asked them, where are we going to get it? They didn't say we can't afford it. They didn't talk about money here. There was something different. When it came time to later feed the 4,000, notice they didn't mention money. They're already focused on the bread of life. So you see a progression. Something has changed. Something has grown. This desolate place. Remember in the feeding of the 5,000, it said the place was barren? The definition of that barren place was a place that was cultivatable, but just not being used. It had grass. Here, it says it was a desolate place, literally a wasteland. That's the definition. This is a different kind of desolate. Literally, they were in a wasteland. Isn't that appropriate for where the Gentiles would be to receive the bread of life? Where did the Gentiles come from? Paganism. How much more desolate do you get than paganism? You don't. That's where the Gentiles would receive the bread of life. How many loaves do you have? What Jesus is really asking is, what feeds you that you have to feed them? That is a very key and important question. What feeds you that you have to feed them? The apostles would have to give the Gentiles what the apostles themselves had been given. Not based on the law, not based on money, not based on what was, but based on what was to come. The bread of life. What is it that you have that you can give? And this has been a primary lesson for the gospel age. So, let's do a little comparison here. The gospel as applied to Jewish Christians in the feeding of the 5,000 versus the gospel as applied to Gentile Christians. The Jewish Christians were in a solitary place, and there was green grass growing. That's what the scripture says. The Gentile Christians came from a desolate place, an absolute wasteland. The Jewish Christians, the apostles, didn't understand the preparation. But afterwards, they understood how to prepare. To the Jewish Christians, the apostles didn't really understand what Jesus meant. But the feeding of the 4,000 to the Gentiles, the apostles were ready to move forward, even though they knew they couldn't do it without Jesus. They were in familiar territory, and they had learned a valuable lesson. And so now they knew a feeding could commence because Jesus was there. Simple as that. Chapter 3. Oops. One more slide. The gospel is applied to Christians, again, the 5,000, and the gospel is applied to the Gentiles, the feeding of the 4,000. The difference is in the approach, is what happens, and the timing. But the end result, brethren, is the same. Who gets fed? The multitude. Who was hungry? The multitude. What's the difference? It's a different multitude. What are they fed? The same thing, just at a different time and through a slightly different learning process. Chapter 3, provision. The provision of the feeding of the 5,000 and the feeding of the 4,000. And let's get started by looking at the feeding of the 5,000, because chronologically, that's where what was first. John 6, verses 8 and 9, one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are these for so many people?" And brethren, you all know the story. And if you're like me, you read these things and you know what's coming, right? You know that you're going to take these 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, and you're going to feed 5,000 people. And you say, this is unbelievable. And they ask this question in a very innocent fashion. Okay, this is what we have, but what is this for so many? The lad with 5 loaves, what could that possibly represent? Well, and again, we're making suggestions here, so these are for your consideration. They didn't have what was necessary to feed the multitudes. Perhaps a picture of Jesus himself in his innocence being prepared. A young man being about his father's business. We remember that from scripture. Perhaps remind us of another young man, David, who with only 5 smooth stones saved Israel. 2 fish. Again, suggestions. Perhaps the Old and New Testament or the Law and the Prophets. Whatever it was, brethren, we know this. It was a balanced meal and it would end up being enough. What are these for so many? How could Israel be given spiritual food from such humble and insignificant beginnings? How could that possibly happen? And the answer is by the grace of God and by the miracles of God through Jesus. Again, let me remind you, prophecy is a love letter from your Father saying, "I am taking care of you." This is a prophecy of action from your Father through our Lord saying, "I have always taken care of you and will continue to take care of you." So that's a summation on the feeding of the 5,000 in terms of the preparation. So the feeding of the 4,000, 7 loaves and a few small fish. 7 loaves and a few small fish. The numbers are slightly different. 7 loaves. First feeding was 5, now 7, representing spiritual perfection. The perfect amount was supplied was to be multiplied for ample provision for the entire gospel age. And again, I think it's interesting that if we're suggesting it this way, we have the... Well, actually, I'm getting ahead of myself. Never mind. This time, the disciples had the provisions on hand. They had been given the ability to understand what they had been given, and they were now to be giving. They didn't know how it would actually work, but they trusted Jesus to make it happen without question. And see, isn't that the important thing, brethren? In a lesson of faith, trust is without question. How often do we trust without question? The Spirit and the kingdom were now in their hands. They were now prepared for the gospel miracle to work through their seemingly small store. And brethren, when you think about it, I just want to jump ahead a moment and out of the main lesson. Here we are at the end of the gospel age. And how many brethren are there throughout the world? We are less than a drop in the bucket. We're less than a drop on the drop in the bucket. A seemingly small store of truth, yet it will be exactly ample to usher in the full establishment of the kingdom. There's power in these lessons. Interesting numbers lesson here. And before, you can see the numbers. I got this from an article, a discourse that actually Brother Rick Cunningham gave. In the feeding of the 4,000, it said 7 loaves and a few small fish. And Brother Obi was discussing this with me before the meeting here. In the Sinaitic manuscript, the first corrector of the Sinaitic manuscript made a note that essentially said, you forgot the number 2. So it is verifiable that there were 2 fish from the Sinaitic manuscript for the feeding of the 4,000. So you do the math, and what do you get? You have a few fish. Sinaitic says 2. 5 loaves and 2 fish. 7 loaves and 2 fish. You have 16. How many were fed? 9,000. 16 times 9 is how many? You can't make this up. You can't make it up. It gives us a sense of the completeness of this feeding. Prophecy is a love letter from your Father telling you, I have it in control. This is a prophecy of action where Jesus is telling us, you are cared for from the very beginning, from the very first one, to the very, very last. You will all be fed. Chapter 4. People are prepared. You have to have these people prepared for their experience. So let's move forward here. John 6, Luke 9, Mark 6. Jesus said to his disciples, have the people sit down to eat in groups of about 50 each. Now remember, this is the feeding of the 5,000. There was much grass in the place, okay, cultivatable. And he commanded them to all sit down by groups on the green grass. They sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Okay, I'm going to have to pick up the pace because we're going to run out of time here. Fifties, groups of hundreds and fifties. Doesn't that remind you of the law? Remember how in Judges you had the people divided up into hundreds and fifties. So it's very appropriate that it was a message directly to Israel, the call of the church out of Israel. It was very organized and law-like in its approach. The green grass, they were in a place where the lost sheep could find pasture. Preparing the people was putting them in a place where they could be fed. Now let's compare that with the feeding of the 4,000. Feeding the 4,000, he directed the people to sit down on the ground. What happened to organization? What happened to order? Well, let's take a look. There's no grass, just barren ground of a waste and desolate place. Jesus had already proclaimed, your house is left unto you desolate. Here the law of liberty reigns, and yet still under the command of Jesus. So they're still fed, but they're not told to break up into groups in an orderly fashion. And isn't that the way the Christian church, once Gentiles came in, became? It lost a lot of that order of the law, but it still got the job done. Nobody went hungry in the feeding of the 4,000. It just was done in a slightly different way. All commanded to sit, but no particular order. Chapter 5, prayer. It's interesting how Jesus approaches these things in the same way. feeding of the 5,000. Mark 6 and John 6. And he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up toward heaven, he blessed the food, and having given thanks, broke the loaves, and he kept giving them to the disciples to set before them, and they divided the 2 fish among them as much as they wanted, and they all ate. The feeding of the 4,000, you have a very similar approach. He gives thanks, and I'm going to start to move a little more quickly. He gives thanks, and he blesses the bread. Doesn't that remind you of the most important bread of our Christian walk? Jesus does the same thing with the memorial. It shows us the sacredness of these feedings. It shows us how important these are as a spiritual lesson. Not because you want your belly to be full, but it's a spiritual lesson for the Jewish Christian and for the Gentile Christian. But let's keep moving here. With both feeding of the 5,000 and the 4,000, it was the same consecration of the bread and the fish that was attributed to his own body, and with the same thanksgiving of bread and the fish that was attributed to his own body and blood. The feeding of the true bread of life could in both cases begin. It's the same because it's the same calling. Nothing is different in the calling. The administration perhaps is a little bit different, but it's the exact same calling. The feeding of the 5,000 and the 4,000. For the high calling, whether to the Jew first or to the Gentile second, the call to be fed remains the same, only separated by time and timing. That's it. The first, relative to the physical presence of Jesus and his apostles, and the second, through those who would later take up the cause of Christ, the apostles, and then the messengers, which we have not even begun to talk about yet. And again, brethren, I'm moving kind of quickly because I want to try to get this whole lesson in, and there's a lot here. But remember, as I tell you I'm moving quickly, I'm going to stop again. Prophecy is a love letter from your Father. This is a prophecy of action from your Lord that says, every one of you will be completely satisfied and fed from the first of the faithful to the last of the faithful. Preparing to pay it forward. Chapter 6. So, what do they do after they're fed? What happens is, everybody's filled, and what do you have at the end of a meal oftentimes? Leftovers. So what do you do with the leftovers? Let's take a look at what happens with the feeding of the 5,000. There are 12 baskets filled with fragments from the 5 barley loaves and of the fish. So there are 12 baskets left over. Where does that bring us? Well, first of all, they were satisfied, and the gospel satisfied. They gathered the leftover fragments, showing the framework of the immediate future of the gospel. There were 12 baskets. How many apostles? That's a question. 12. Basket for an apostle. Showing us those who would carry the gospel would be the apostles. The 12 baskets, 12 apostles, there are several reprints on that. All 12 baskets were filled, giving us a clear picture of the responsibility that those 12 would have after Jesus' death. They would personally carry and spread the gospel. They had here observed and participated in the miracle, and now Jesus would assign them to go forward and feed others. Understand that these baskets that were filled were baskets that the apostles could literally carry themselves. Okay, there were baskets that a man could carry. Next one. The feeding of the 4,000. And they ate and were satisfied. Sounds familiar. And they picked up 7 large baskets full of what was left over of the broken pieces. And those who were fed were 4,000 men and besides women and children. So now you have the feeding of the 4,000. And what happens at the end of the meal? Leftovers. And what do they do with those leftovers? They put them in baskets, but it's different this time. Okay? They were satisfied because the gospel satisfies. They picked up the leftovers, and it's no longer focused on the 12 apostles, because now you have everyone doing the work. So it's taking the impetus, the responsibility off of 12 individuals who carry 12 baskets and saying now these are 7 large baskets and these are big baskets. These are different, a different kind of a basket. Matter of fact, they are a basket that's big enough to hold a man. So you don't carry that around. Okay? And the only other time the word for basket is used is the time they lowered the Apostle Paul down in that kind of a basket. So you see, you have 7 And it shows us the seven messengers covering the seven periods of the church throughout the entire gospel age. Let's go. Who ate? We have 5,000 and 4,000. We've been saying that over and over again. But there were more than that. There were more than that. There were about 5,000 men who ate besides women and children. So there's a specific number plus lots of others. Feeding of the 4,000, how many ate? About 4,000 men besides women and children, a specific number plus many others. Perhaps we're looking at the church and the great company. And let's tell you why we think that. We're not going to go get into this in detail because there's not... Well, just go back to that. Okay, not enough time. But the parable of the sower gives us several different ways the seed is received. There is, in the highlighted area, and the one on whom the seed was sown among the thorns is the man who hears the word, and the worries of the world and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. So we want to focus on that piece right now as we look at the picture of the great company. The sown seed in the thorny places, it doesn't die. It does produce a plant. The plant lives, though it's unfruitful. Perhaps this is not bearing the fruit of spirituality that would have otherwise brought you to true faithfulness. And it shows that some ate to full maturity as men, and that's why in the scripture it says 5,000 and 4,000 men plus others, while others were not of the number to be counted. The call having gone out to the Jews and the Gentiles produced the same type of results, but you had those who came to the full maturity of a man, and then you had the everybody else pictured. So, let's again pull it together. The calling of the church in its entirety in the 5,000. You've got that overall big picture, but it's focusing on the calling of the Jewish Christian and the trial and development of the church in its entirety, but focusing on the Gentile Christian. So we're looking at both feedings and saying they both show us the whole gospel age in some ways. Matthew 25, verses 1 to 4, the parable of the virgins. Five of the virgins were faithful. After Pentecost, remember, there are two instances of mass conversion, 3,000 and 2,000, adds up to 5,000. It just seems to fit that you have 5,000 as the number representing Jewish Christianity. Whereas, when you look at the trial and development of the true church, the whole church, over the gospel age, what do you have? You have... Everybody knows the significance of the number 40, of a period of trial and testing. You have several examples in Jesus' life, in the life of Moses, in Israel, in the time of testing. You multiply that 40 to 100-fold, and you're here already? Oh, dear. And what do you get? 4,000. So we've got a full gospel age picture. Let's continue. The 5,000, the call of the whole church, begins with Israel, presented by Jesus and the apostles. And the 4,000, the trial and development of the whole church, expands to the Gentiles. So both of them give us a picture of the whole picture, but are focusing on each one part. Chapter 7, parting. Jesus leaves both scenes. How does he do it? In both cases, first of all, in the feeding of the 5,000, what happened? They wanted to make him king. Take a look at the highlighted, but he goes away by himself. Israel longed for the deliverance from their Messiah. We know what happened as he rode into the city. He sent the crowd away. He went by himself to pray because he knew he had to be tried. In the feeding of the 5,000, the apostles he sent in the boat. And when they were out in the boat, they got into trouble. Jesus walks on the water and he gets in the boat with them. And I'm just going to be summing up here quickly. They got in the boat and the wind stopped. Jesus took their trial and settled it so they could manage it. And the feeding of the 4,000, what happens? He sends away the crowds again. They don't ask for a king. He enters the boat with his disciples and they come to another region. So he ends up in the boat in both cases. And that is one of the most significant points, I think, of this lesson. Let's just continue. Let's wrap this up because Brother Obi is here. Precious promise and personal responsibility. Brethren, what is the lesson for you and for I looking at this love letter of prophecy of action by Jesus? Jesus is going to his Father, and he says, he's teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Let's take that thought. Let's take the next scripture. And he said, next one. Matthew 7:24-27. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts on them may be compared to a wise man who built his house upon the rock. And when the trials came, it stood strong because Jesus' influence was with them. So what are the lessons we pull together here? Lesson for us. The gospel first went to Israel, but they would reject him. The plan must be complete, so the call went to the Gentiles. The 5,000 and the 4,000 shows us two different parts. The time of Jesus and the time of the apostles until Cornelius, and then the call to the Gentiles. The end result, brethren, and we've alluded to it through the whole lesson here this afternoon, they are fed. They are cared for. They are provided for by the 12 baskets and by the 7 baskets. And Jesus stays in the boat. So no matter where you are in the gospel age, in that tumult of trial and difficulty, Jesus is in the boat with you. The Lord is still in the boat with us, brethren. Our work is not yet complete. Let us be fed by the bread of life, but don't stop there. It's wonderful to be fed. And you know what? We come to the convention to be fed by the bread of life. And that's good. And it's important. But then you have to take the bread and you have to multiply it and we have to share it because that's our job. Jesus is in the boat with us. Let us take what nourishes us and give it away freely. That's what the apostles learned to do. They didn't know how, but it was by the grace of God through Jesus. Prophecy is a love letter. It's a love letter from your Father. It's saying to you, my child, I love you. I've always loved you. I know your past. I know your present. And I know your future. The feeding of the multitudes is a prophecy of action from Jesus saying, my brethren, I love you. I know what you're going to be going through, past history, present, and the future. You will always be fed. You will always be cared for. Now go be my true followers. May the Lord have his blessing.